Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, friends. Happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Hope your Saturday is treating you well. I have full transparency for you right to kick things off. This is take two. I just recorded a 40-minute episode that did not have any audio on it whatsoever, and it's now 2:09 in the morning. So this might be a slightly abbreviated version from the one that I just recorded. The good news is I should be very well-versed at this point in time in our discussion for today because I've done it already. So let's get right into it. If you would be so kind, since this is the sort of day that is going to be happening for me, if you could like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews, those things always help a ton. Super simple to do, but they help the algorithm, the search engines, all those sort of things. So like I said, very simple, but it helps the podcast a ton. We've got a decent amount to get into today, some interesting news and notes, then we'll get to our Packers Vikings grades. I know it's Saturday. I know the game was last week. My apologies for being under the weather and taking a little bit longer on grades this week. I also know it wasn't obviously the most fun game in the world, but I still think there's fun things to look at from who played well, who didn't play well, what it means, and hopefully some improvements for some of those players moving forward and some other noteworthy performances. So we'll get into all of that. Before we get there, a couple pieces of news and notes. We did hear from Matt LaFleur. Well, I should say, first of all, Luke Getsy was spotted at practice, and there was then the follow-up question in the media auditorium about what his role was with the Packers and how long it's been going on. Luke Getsy is, in fact, consulting with the Packers in a very similar situation as Robert Saleh. If you remember, Robert Saleh, defensive head coach, defensive coordinator, is helping the offensive side of the ball with Matt LaFleur as a consultant, and now Luke Getsy, former Packers quarterbacks coach, and then the offensive coordinator for the Bears and the Raiders. He is helping on the defensive side of the ball. And I love this. They've done something similar before with Aubrey Pleasant. And the fact that you can bring in smart people into your organization like Luke Getsy and Robert Saleh and just add additional voices to the room. I think Matt LaFleur does a tremendous job as a coach of having an atmosphere where everyone's ideas are welcome. And when you have two people like that who are able to be there to throw ideas off of and to pick sort of your game plans apart, it is a value add for the organization as a whole. I'm sure it's beneficial for Robert Saleh as he gets ready for his next gig. Same thing with Luke Getsy. And I love this idea. From a offensive standpoint, Matt LaFleur is able to put his game plan together and throw it at Robert Saleh and say, you know, what do you think is, you know, some of the flaws of this? What as a defensive coordinator would you pick apart? And Robert Saleh has the ability to view the Packers offensive tape and say, if I were putting together a game plan this week to stop your offense, this is what I would do because here's your weaknesses, here's your tells, here's what you're doing poorly, and here's what I would attack as a defensive coordinator. And the fact that you have access to that is a huge value add for the offense and for Matt LaFleur. And then on the flip side, for Jeff Hafley, the fact that now you have this former offensive coordinator in Chicago and with the Raiders that has put together these sort of game plans, and now he can look at the tape of Green Bay and of Green Bay's defense and say, here's how I would attack it. Here's what offense I would put together. Here's how, you know, your weaknesses, here's your tells, and to be able to go through all that. Again, a huge value add for Jeff Hafley. And I'll say this one more time. Well, Matt LaFleur has done a great job of sort of separating church and state between Robert Saleh and Jeff Hafley so that there's no confusion of who's in charge or is, you know, are some people going to be drawn to Robert Saleh and what he, like, they're very smart to do it that way. But the fact that Jeff Hafley can also go to Robert Saleh and say, hey, what do you think of this? And the fact that Matt LaFleur can throw things past Luke Getsy still if he wants to. Again, the more smart people that you can have in your organization to throw those ideas off of and to have them consulting with you is a plus all the way around. So I love it. I love the fact that Getsy's been helping out. Apparently he's been doing this for multiple weeks now. And this is just the first time he was actually in Green Bay at practice. And again, who knows how long these things will last. my assumption would be until the season's over. And then, you know, maybe Luke Getsy stays on in some capacity. We pretty much know Robert Saleh is not going to, unless Jeff Hafley were to somehow get a head coaching job and Robert Saleh would accept the defensive coordinator job in Green Bay. Outside of something like that, those agreements are probably going to come to an end as soon as the season's done, and Saleh will be looking for coaching jobs and things like that. But for right now, really awesome that they have those resources at their disposal with the bright minds that, again, Getsy and Saleh have on their respective sides of the ball. An interesting note from Ken Ingles on Sean Ryan. For those of you who don't know, when you are a rookie non-first round pick, if you hit a certain threshold of snaps started in your first 3 years, you get a bonus in year four. Happens all the time, kind of goes under the radar. It's about a $2 million bonus, and you have to start 35% of your snaps over your first three seasons. I've known about this rule for a very long time, or this escalator for a very long time, but never in a million years did I ever think about tracking it to see who's close to it or anything like that. Well, Ken Ingles, kudos to him, tracked it for Sean Ryan and noticed that Sean Ryan is ridiculously close to hitting that accelerator. And in order to get it, again, you have to have started 35% of your snaps that you've played. And if he's done so, then he gets again, about a $2 million bonus in 2025. And in order to hit that accelerator, Sean Ryan needs the offense to play 65 snaps at least, and he needs to play all of them. And so it's pretty crazy. And like a normal game is usually right around 65 snaps on both sides of the ball. Again, it can vary depending on what happens. The Packers are averaging a little fewer or a little less than 65 snaps per game on offense. So Sean Ryan has to hope that this is one where the offense plays more than 65 and he plays the entirety of it. Now, the interesting juxtaposition here is for Sean Ryan, and I want him to be able to get paid and everything like that. I'm not cheering against him here. Let me be very clear. But for Sean Ryan, he gets that $2 million bonus if he hits it. However, that does count against the salary cap. Now, anytime I talk about money or salary or things like that, I always view it from a salary cap standpoint, because for us as fans, the amount that is going from one bank account to another doesn't really affect us all that much, right? Yes, it goes from the Packers bank accounts into these players' bank accounts, and these players get paid, and I want all of them to get paid. Let me be crystal clear. But the most important thing from a fan standpoint is the healthiness of the salary cap, because that gives you more resources to go out and spend and utilize, right? So it's this interesting juxtaposition where I'm rooting for Sean Ryan to get this bonus, but it is an additional $2 million that comes off the salary cap if he does hit this incentive. So I'll just put it this way. I hope he gets it for his sake. I won't be super disappointed or losing sleep over if it's 64 snaps instead of 65. Again, I'm not trying to say that in a way that's disparaging towards Sean Ryan and his paycheck, right? Because I get that that's a lot of money. And for him, that would be pretty freaking awesome. For the Packers, again, yeah, from a salary cap standpoint, you want them to have more money to go out and spend. So I'll let you decide what you want to do with that information. But it's an interesting situation nonetheless. And for Sean Ryan, obviously a lot to hope for and play for in this game. If he can stay healthy throughout the entirety of the game, play 65 plus snaps, a big $2 million bonus for him in 2025. All right, let's get to our injury report presented by Habish, Habish, and Rotier. For the Packers, Jaire Alexander, Zane Anderson, Andre Dillard, Quay Walker, and Evan Williams are all out. Questionable are Christian Watson and Bretton Cox. And good to go are Chris Brooks, Javon Bullard, Josh Jacobs, Elton Jenkins, Tucker Kraft, and Devontae Wyatt, which means Devontae Wyatt cleared concussion protocol. Now, Bretton Cox and Christian Watson, both questionable. Cox did not practice at all this week. And that was sort of a prerequisite that we heard from Matt LaFleur for players to be healthy enough to play. You had to practice. You have to be healthy. And it seems like Cox is not. And then for Christian Watson, I just can't imagine the world and the scenario in which you want to rush him back. It doesn't seem like a smart idea. If he does play, I would assume it is like the first drive just to get him, again, reacclimated. He only missed one game, so I don't know that there's this huge need for it, but I would assume it's just like one drive and then they probably shut him down after that. But I would assume he probably doesn't play in this game. I would think that would be the common sense approach here, but we'll have to kind of wait and see. But again, Jaire, Zane Anderson, Andre Dillard, Quay Walker, and Evan Williams all out. By the way, I would expect a IR stint for Jaire Alexander to start on Saturday and some other call-ups and transactions to take place. We'll keep you posted on that tomorrow. Again, Christian Watson and Bretton Cox questionable, and Chris Brooks, Javon Bullard, Josh Jacobs, Elton Jenkins, Tucker Kraft, and Devontae Wyatt all good to go. For the Bears, pretty cut and dry injury report. Elijah Hicks, the defensive back, Travis Homer, the running back, and Tevin Jenkins, the offensive lineman, are all out with injury. Everyone else on their roster is good to go and play in this game. Also want to talk about my Luigi's Pizza Player of the Game. I did not do a post-game show, so did not get to do our Luigi's Pizza Player of the Game. I am going with Edgerrin Cooper. We'll talk about his high grade in just a moment here. Just a really fun player to watch right now. Just operating at a different level, different speed, different pace. And it just really feels like we're seeing a star grow right in front of our eyes. So he is my Luigi's Pizza Player of the Game. 10 tackles, 4 tackles for loss. Was a little bit of everywhere. Some bad too, which we're going to talk about in our grades in just a moment. But he still gets the prestigious Luigi's Pizza Player of the Game award. Of course, as soon as Green Bay picks up their win against the Bears this week, you can use hashtag Luigi's Victory Monday and follow Luigi's Pizza at Luigi's Pizza, L-U-I-G-E-S-P-I-Z-Z-A, to be entered to win a free case of Luigi's Frozen Pizzas. And if you have not tried, whether you're a winner or not, if you have not tried Luigi's Frozen Pizzas yet, I am a pizza connoisseur, especially when it comes to frozen pizzas. I have gone down that aisle and tried every single pizza known to man, and Luigi's is the best. It is my favorite. I am not just saying that. It is absolutely ridiculously good. Their sauce is what sets it apart, in my opinion, but their fresh ingredients are great as well. Try the ultra thin crust, the fresh dough, any of them. They're all amazing. They're literally all amazing. I'm still not a black olive guy. Sorry, Luigi's. I'm not going to do the black olive ones. So I can't speak to those, but all the rest of them, absolutely amazing. All right, let's get to our grades from this past week. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball. No major performances here on offense. 3 solid performances, Bo Melton, Dontayvion Wicks, and Sean Ryan, all with plus 0.35 grades. Let's start with Sean Ryan. I'll start with the holding penalty. Yes, I did have that as a hold. His hand's outside the body. If it's inside and you pancake him, it's not going to get called. I think more than anything, he just put himself in a position to get called for that holding penalty, whether you want to debate whether it was or not. When that hand's on the outside and then he tries to separate and then it goes to ground, it's going to get called as a hold more often than not. So to me, a little bit of a lower grade there due to the fact that he put himself in a position to get called for a holding penalty. If you don't see it that way, that's fine. Guess what? Then Sean Ryan's even higher on this list and is easily the highest graded player, and there's no tie break here. So if that's what you want to view it as, then Sean Ryan would be even higher. I love the way that he's blocking. A couple of hiccups still here and there. I would still like to see him get a little bit more consistent, but his most effective blocks from a run blocking standpoint are the best run blocks on the team, in my opinion. I'm not sure I'm going to go as far to say he's the best run blocker, because I think maybe Elton and maybe even Zach Tom are a little bit more consistent, but the finishing ability and the movement ability in the run game for Sean Ryan is better, and his best blocks are better than anyone else's along the offensive line when it comes to run blocking, in my opinion. So yeah, really like this game from Sean Ryan. As far as Wicks and Melton go, I thought Wicks blocked well once again. I thought he got open a couple times and the ball just didn't come his way. I thought he had good hands, didn't drop anything in this game, came up with the catches when he needed to, and no real negatives on the day. Again, we're not talking about an 8-catch, 100-yard performance or anything like that. This is a pretty low grade for top overall players with a plus 0.35. It was just that kind of day for Green Bay's offense, but still nice day for Wicks. Same thing with Bo Melton. He actually had a go route from the slot where he just absolutely nuked the corner, was wide open. Unfortunately, Jordan didn't have time in the pocket to get the ball down the field and find Bo Melton on that play, but he absolutely nuked a corner on a go route from the slot. That could have been a big play had the ball found his way over to Bo Melton on that play. It just didn't, and then came up with a couple contested catches. I thought he blocked well. Not a ton of opportunities for Bo Melton in this game, but when he was out there, he looked good, made an impact when needed, and again, did everything he could to help, just didn't get that many opportunities, but still a solid performance from Melton. So Melton, Wicks, and Sean Ryan, all plus 0.35, my 3 highest graded players on offense in this one. My lowest graded player was Josh Myers, negative 1.15 grade. That was the lowest grade that I've given anyone on offense so far this season. 2 completely biffed blocks in this game. And then just, I thought, a poor performance in run blocking. And then a couple missed blitz pickups and things, or blitz assignments. Just not a great day from Josh Myers. I thought he was the weak link up front. PFF had more of like a neutral grade on him. I don't know. I did not see it that way. I thought this was a really tough one, and it's been disappointing for Myers as of late. I really did think earlier in the year he was playing some of his best football, and I thought whether it was just due to contract year or maybe just the game slowing down for him, I did feel like he was playing better, and I was somewhat confident or hopeful that was going to be able to continue through the entirety of the season. I'm not sure if it was happenstance, but I think it was his foot or his toe that he had an injury on earlier this season. It was either foot or toe, or some sort of foot injury. And it was right around that time that he got the injury that he started having that performance come down again. And then even since being off the injury report, it just hasn't been the same. And we're starting to see a lot of those inconsistencies and sort of poor performance moments that we've seen from Josh Myers the past couple of seasons, unfortunately, rear their ugly head again. With this performance, he's now my lowest graded offensive player on the season. So going from a player who I thought was having a nice start to the year to somebody that's, again, sort of regressing back and having that sort of inconsistent season that we've sort of come to expect from Josh Myers, unfortunately.
Hey friends, we're about to kick off the new year and there's no better way to start 2025 than by winning. And right now on Prize Picks, you can win up to 1,000 times your money. And that's because Prize Picks is the best place to get real money action while watching your favorite sports. Prize Picks also offers a variety of weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts like Taco Tuesday, when Prize Picks discounts select player projections up to 25% to provide even more value for your lineups. Make your Prize Picks in fewer than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Caleb Williams to throw at least one interception, Brandon McManus to connect on two or more field goals, and I'm going to take as many Packers sacks as I can get. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup by using code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. Run your game.
Jaden Reed, -0.8, was my second lowest graded player. Obviously had the fourth down drop. Just couldn't get anything going on offense. I thought his run blocking could be a little bit better. I would have liked to have seen Green Bay try to get him a little bit more involved in this game. Maybe, again, if need be, generate some touches for him and maybe just game plan that in a little bit more. But I thought Reed struggled to get open for a good chunk of the day. Like I said, had the drop, had some missed blocks as well. And just your uncharacteristic performance from Jaden. And they've got to get him going. I think that's going to be a huge thing against the Bears in this final week, is to hopefully get a little bit of Jaden Reed mojo back. There's no reason he should be leading the league in drops. And it's got to get corrected. It's got to get cleaned up. He's way too important of a player on this team. And if they go into the playoffs with a sputtering Jaden Reed and they can't get him going, it's probably going to be a kiss of death for Green Bay, because he's just too important of a player on offense. And then last but not least was Rashid Walker, -0.25. Not this brutal score from Rashid. Had one play with Jonathan Grenard where he was just a tick slow out of his stance and Grenard just blew by him. Some good run blocks in this game, some good pass blocks in this game. But again, you just end up with a little bit of inconsistency here from Rashid Walker, which has kind of been the name of the game for him so far this season. He's my second lowest graded player on offense. It's not a bad grade. There's only four players that have a negative grade on offense. And again, Rashid's and Jordan Morgan's one of them too, have very minimal negatives, but just been that kind of year for Rashid. I still like him a lot. I still think he can be a really good player, but just like to see that consistency come up just a little bit. And again, not a brutal grade here, -0.25. Nothing to really, again, dig into too aggressively, but that one play to Grenard was the real negative one. Some other noteworthy ones on offense: Jordan Love, +0.3. Yes, did have a slight positive in this one. I thought he had a tough start to the game and then settled in a little bit too late, quite frankly, you know, middle of the fourth quarter. I didn't think the pass protection did him a ton of favors. I didn't think the wide receivers did him a ton of favors. But the reason that you give him that contract is because you hope he can elevate the team, even in some of those situations against good opponents. I thought there were some opportunities to do that. There's an out route to Romeo Doubs that he misses, that play to Dontavian Wicks where Wicks lays out for it. It was a really tough throw, no question about it, but just missed that one by a little bit. There's a go route late in the game to Romeo Doubs that he misses. Just the accuracy, the fundamentals need to get cleaned up a little bit. They need a high performing Jordan Love come playoff time. These last couple games have come certainly short of that. I thought there were some opportunities earlier to just put a better performance together, maybe get the offense in a little bit more rhythm. And Jordan just didn't have that early in the game. It wasn't again until it was a little bit too late, but still ended up with a slight positive in this one. Josh Jacobs, a very minimal positive, had the biggest negative moment in this game with a huge fumble early on, which was a massive negative grade, but with some good running, including a touchdown run, multiple missed tackles, he was able to get this still to a slight positive. But make no mistake, that fumble was a huge negative, and he had to overcome that even just to get it to that very slight positive. Tucker Kraft and Zach Tom. Tucker Kraft, just some ups and downs, ended with an exact neutral grade. And then Zach Tom had what looked like was going to be the highest grade of the day, then had a penalty and a pressure that he gave up late, and just kind of wasn't quite as complete at the end of this game and had some hiccups that brought that grade back down to a neutral. But early, he was basically the opposite of the offense. He actually played well early and then struggled late, whereas the rest of the offense was basically struggled early and played well late. So it was just a weird juxtaposition as well there for Zach Tom. Top three on defense, Edgerrin Cooper plus 0.35. Talk about, I love the word that Tom Brady used. You know, Tom Brady has been very up and down himself in the booth, but I love the word volatile that he used for Edgerrin Cooper. The highs are very, very high. He's doing some unbelievable stuff. It's almost like he's teleporting to different areas on the field with how fast that he is. Four tackles for loss, 10 tackles. He was all over the place. Thought there were a couple times where he's trying to do a bit too much and sometimes taking the cheese too. And there were some plays in coverage where he drifted too far to one side to kind of, you know, either read the quarterback's eyes or to go make a play, but he actually needed to stay on his side and it came back to haunt him. There are a couple plays where he needed to stay deeper, but he came up and tried to, you know, again, make a play on a defender or an offensive player in front of him, but he needed to stay back and then they were able to throw over the top of him. So he just needs to stay a bit more consistent, know his assignments, know his roles. There's a couple plays late too, where he kind of bit inside on the run. Just, I know he wants to make plays and it's still a very big net positive for what Edgerrin Cooper is doing out there. But the step to his game that he needs to take to go from this player who's sort of becoming a star before our eyes and having these flash plays to actually being a all-pro caliber player is making sure you're doing the little things, the fundamentals, knowing your assignment, not trying to do too much, and then let that raw natural ability come out within the framework of the defense. And if he can do that, then he's a top three linebacker in the league. And right now it's just the signs of being a top three linebacker in the league. So just needs to be a bit more consistent there. Still was the highest graded player on defense and deservedly so. The big plays that he came up with, also had a big missed tackle on the screen pass that ended in a touchdown as well. Tough tackle, but one that he would, I'm sure tell you that he would have liked to have made in that situation. Xavier McKinney plus 0.3. Thought he did a really nice job early in this game of filling the lane and making some tackles in the run game. Thought he was exactly where he needed to be the vast majority of the game. A couple plays later that he'd probably like to have back, but still ended up in a net positive. And then Carrington Valentine, again, another volatile player in this game. The huge interception, but then fumbles it. Had he not fumbled it, it would have been a much higher grade probably on the day too, but he put the ball in harm's way. And thankfully, Carl Brooks was there to clean it up and pick up that fumble. But that's once you get the pick, you got to take care of the ball. Otherwise, you end up giving it right back to Minnesota, and he almost did on that play. Had a big missed tackle in the run game. Had an illegal hands to the face on Justin Jefferson. I thought early in the game he was phenomenal in zone coverage. There's some really good stuff on tape from Carrington Valentine in this game, but also a little bit of volatility and some things that, as a young corner, he still needs to clean up as well. Bottom three on defense, Javon Bullard, negative 0.7. Would have liked to have seen Javon be a little bit more consistent in this game. And I thought he played better in slot corner, but you know, before Zane Anderson went out, and then struggled more at safety, which again, he didn't really, I'm sure, practice much there that week. He was practicing at corner. He was also banged up through the week, so probably didn't practice all that much in general. And then again, then having to basically switch positions and go to safety. The big play, of course, was the Jordan Addison play. Now, Sam Darnold had all the time in the world to let this play develop, but Addison's, you know, runs the little hook, sits, makes a move. Bullard bites on it and then just burns him deep on a little, you know, kind of go like circles back and does a go route after that. Way too easy a separation. I know it's a hang with him a little bit, but you still got to make sure that you're not getting beat deep in that situation. And Bullard obviously gave up the touchdown there. Thought he tackled well early. Thought there were a couple plays later from taking an angle standpoint and just tackling standpoint he would have liked to have had back. I'm not this big believer that Javon Bullard's having this really tough season and is really struggling. I still think he's a value add. I still think there's some things he's really doing well. I love the intensity and physicality that he brings, but just needs to be a little bit more aware, especially in coverage of everything that he's doing, taking a few better angles here and there, and then just making sure that, you know, Jordan Addison doesn't get him to bite the cheese and, you know, beats him for a touchdown. Those things certainly don't help either. Brenton Cox, negative 0.65. Let me just point out here, he hurt his foot early in the game. You can see it was nasty looking, tweaked. It looked like an ankle, but they're listing it as a foot. was ugly. Kudos to him for coming back and playing. Once he came back and played, you could tell he was not himself. Now, I don't get to grade any more leniently because I would have to know everyone's injury status at all times in order to do so, and I just don't. So I don't get to be any nicer on my grading because I think he's hurt, but you could tell he was not 100%. And I give him a ton of credit for fighting through it, but he was struggling to get off of blocks, make any impact as a pass rusher or as a run defender. And I think the injury there did play a huge factor in that. Eric Wilson, his lowest grade of the season with a negative 0.6. Minnesota definitely picking on him. Thought he was a little bit over-aggressive at times. Thought he was not always getting to his spots. I thought he was being manipulated in the passing game. Thought he was late getting to the hole at times. He struggled to get off of blocks. Just kind of a tough day for Eric Wilson. And like I said, Minnesota definitely kind of targeted him, I think both in the run game and in the passing game. So bottom three on defense, Javon Bullard, Brenton Cox, and Eric Wilson. Some noteworthy performances. Devontae Wyatt was the only player at defensive line, either end or tackle, that graded in the positive. He had a plus 0.1. PFF had a 90 plus grade on him. He did get some pressure early, but he couldn't really finish it, kind of stumbled into a couple of those. There were positive signs out of Wyatt, no question. And I think him going out with a concussion was very detrimental to the team because he looked like somebody that was actually capable of winning up front. But he had a slight positive for me. Rashawn Gary and Kingsley Nagbare, negative 0.35 grades. Would have liked to have seen them perform better. Struggled to get off of blocks as pass rushers. Rashawn Gary did have one play where he got there and then kind of missed the sack. I thought he did well in run defense, had a stop late as they were trying to get the ball back. That was pretty good. Nagbare, one of the more disappointing players of the season for me. He had that really big game against Tennessee, couple of solid games here or there, but just really not taking that step that I was really hoping that he was going to be able to this season. Just hasn't really made that impact. And I think it's kind of gone a little bit under the radar. Eric Stokes, plus 0.05 grade, nothing major, but his third consecutive game graded in the positive. It has been noticeably better, not been targeted a ton. There was a play late where I think it was a key third down, Jordan Addison kind of beat him and Sam Darnold just overthrew it on that play. But still, it has been noticeably better for Eric Stokes these past few weeks. And you love to see it. He has graded in the positive all three times. I think it's a plus 0.45 grade over the last 3 weeks after being by far the lowest with a negative 4.2 grade up until that point. So some nice signs of positive grades for Eric Stokes these past few weeks. Keyshawn Nixon, negative 0.35, did have that pass interference penalty and then did get beat by Jordan Addison. Now recovered and broke up the play. If it's a better ball, it's probably a touchdown. So again, grade that how you will, but just a noteworthy play there nonetheless. Not a brutal game from Nixon, but definitely gave up some plays. And then again, that big pass interference penalty. And then Zane Anderson, I actually thought looked really good prior to going out with the concussion. That was very early, very small sample size, but he continues to look the part. I've been very impressed with him over the last couple of weeks. And actually do think his injury was detrimental to that secondary, not only because, you know, Zane Anderson was playing well, but also because it forced Javon Bullard then to go from the slot into that safety position. And he wasn't quite as good when he moved to safety. So it definitely had an impact. And I really liked what I saw to Zane Anderson prior to going out with the injury on special teams. A couple other miscellaneous notes. It was the first time all year that the offense and defense both graded in the negative. It was the offense's lowest grade of the season. It was the defense's third lowest grade of the season. So it was just that type of day. It also is sort of the same story of like, they were bad by their standards and they still went on the road against one of the best teams in football and only lost by two. Now the score was probably not indicative of how well or how much better Minnesota was in that game, but it still is just like the same thing of like, imagine if they just played a good game. Like, imagine what that would look like. That would be fun. They should try doing that. Because again, even when they play what is probably their worst game of the season on the road against arguably the toughest team they faced all season, and they only lost by two. I mean, just go out and play good football. Like, it would be so nice if they could put a four-quarter game together against a good team, but it just has not been that way so far this season. Every edge rusher graded in the negative in this game. The only defensive lineman not to grade in the negative was Devontae Wyatt with a plus 0.1 grade. And the only defensive position that did not grade in the negative on the whole was the cornerback room, which had a exact even 0.00 grade. Every other group on defense graded in the negative. All right, that's going to do it for me today. I'll be back tomorrow with a preview of Packers Bears, so you're going to want to check that out. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Pallotta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handel, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Arnoldo Espinoza, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Step Keat, Love and Football, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Allison Tuckwab, Chris Rager, and Izzy Roberts. I will see you all tomorrow. Again, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. But until next time, and as always, go Pack.